Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you whisper.
Yes, indeed. Let's get started. Tonight, we have a special guest with us. Holly Marie is in the house, and she is a hypnotherapist and shamanic practitioner. And we're going to learn an awful lot about her as we progress through this show. So as they say, stay tuned.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Most people are unaware that unresolved trauma can often be an open invitation for an unwanted etheric hitchhiker. When trauma occurs, it often leads to soul loss, which fractures a person's aura field, creating entry points for entity attachments. Many times, people are not aware that they have attachments and why they are experiencing unfamiliar behaviors. My guest this evening, Holly Marie, is going to help us through this. Holly Marie is a practicing hypnotherapist and shamanic practitioner. Holly uses ancient, multidimensional clearing techniques, modern knowledge, and intuition to help people see deep into their subconscious and beyond. The system Holly has developed allows her clients to easily work through hidden beliefs, programs, and trauma that were once held at the cellular level. When these energy imprints are cleared, true empowerment and emotional freedom take place. Many of her clients work with Holly for deep-rooted traumas that are in need to be cleared through their DNA, their inner child work, soul retrievals, forgiveness, and emotional clearing to free themselves of mental slavery. Holly also specializes in crossing over souls that are stuck in this realm, as well as paranormal and poltergeist clearings. She has helped many people clear suicidal thoughts and physical ailments by removing entities from them. Holly can effectively clear houses remotely just by working on the residents' emotional bodies. We have a lot to talk about this evening, and my guest Holly will help all of us work through some of our issues. So please welcome to the show tonight, my guest, Holly Marie. Well, good evening, Holly, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me. It's really exciting to be here.
Very exciting to have you. Very interesting topic we're going to talk about tonight. A little bit different than most guests, but also very important and very interesting. So, Holly, before we get started here, I think maybe it would be most appropriate if I had you tell the audience a little bit about who you are and what you do, so that way when we I introduce some of these questions, they just kind of evolve the whole pattern slowly for both of us. So take it from there.
Sure. So I'm Holly Marie, and I'm a shamanic practitioner. So my lineage is in the mystics that came before the Inca. There's a lot of history to it. And so it's from Peru. And in the days of the conquistadors, when they invaded Peru, when the Spanish came over and invaded, there was a network of mystics who fled to the mountains, and they stayed in the high Andes for 500 years. And then they got a message from spirit to come down and teach their ways. So I somehow stumbled across this pathway and learned these modalities. And quite frankly, it has been one of the most profound life-changing experiences I've ever had. Some of the modalities include things from obviously clearing the energy field, soul retrieval, recalling lost pieces of ourselves that flee during trauma, inner child work, entity extraction, past life, and destiny retrieval. And it all kind of merges together into just a beautiful shamanic journey where we're actually clearing the energy field and lifting out these old frequencies.
Okay, interesting. And so when we take all of this and we think about how you evolved over time, when did you start with, I would presume, your learnings or your teachings regarding this so you could be the type of, I would call you a practitioner to some degree here, that you are now? When did this all begin?
So in 1998, I went through massage therapy school, became a massage therapist. That was kind of the gateway. And then in 2007, I just had a long history, a long childhood history of, I was sick all the time. I was depressed. It grew into like manic depression. Nothing seemed to be helping. I suffered from digestive issues. So in about 2007 or 2008, I knew I had to do something. Like I knew I had to do something, and everything conventional and allopathic seemed to not be working. So I stumbled into this little health clinic, and I just said, I need to see somebody. And they handed me this woman's card and they said, go see a shaman. And honestly, I grew up in the church. I never even heard that word in my life. So I went to this lady and she removed some things and got me a power animal and shook her rattle. And I was like, this is the biggest joke ever. This did nothing. And a couple months later, something kind of clicked and I'm like, I need to go see this woman again. And lo and behold, it was working on subconscious levels that I in my conscious state was unaware of. So from there, I think I went to see her 2 or 3 times. And then she's like, just take my classes. And to give her credit, it's Annie Burling of Your Sacred Destiny. She's an amazing teacher. So I ended up taking her class, which is called the Medicine Wheel. And you create a medicine bundle as you go through the 4 directions. Each direction, you do different practicums and you create a bundle. And I became her assistant. And then I went on to do the practice on my own. And now I teach it as well.
Yeah, interesting. Good stuff too. And very, very helpful, especially to those that may be in need here. Take note of this program today, because I'm going to be asking Holly a number of questions that hopefully will resonate with some of you. And you might want to really think about how she responds to them. So let's start with, I have a list of questions here, something a little bit different of the format that I have with my guests, but very interesting stuff. And it's all going to surface or formulate here around entities, because for those of us who have had issues with attachments or have had entities or hitchhiker events or anything, and I've had them all, believe me, I think you might find this to be interesting. So Holly, here's your first question here. So one of the things that I thought was really interesting was that you have dealt with, in dealing with entities, that some of them have actually broken cat tails and cracked TV screens and terrorized children and even causing people to mimic personality disorders. So your specialty to remove these entities has been probably fairly specialized, but can you talk a little bit more about how you recognize this and then and go into that a little bit for us?
Sure. One thing I do want to add is going back to the, and I apologize, going back to the allopathic not working, we are biological, but sometimes the energy aspect just needs to be cleared. So with the entity extraction is that there's a number of ways to identify if somebody has an entity. And when somebody comes to me, it's a fine line because I need to figure out, do they really have an entity or are they making this up, right? Is it ego making this up? So I have to distinguish, right? Because I've dealt with people with missing time and all kinds of bizarre experiences. So once I identify that, yes, you actually do have an attachment, an entity, you know, whatever, then we go into where and how did the entity attach, right? And so we're going to go back into that very first point of trauma, whether it's in this life or a past life, and your aura gets fractured, and then they can get in. So how I do it is sometimes I do it remotely, sometimes I do it in person, and we're clearing that point of trauma. And then if I'm doing it remotely, I use a pendulum to test for negatives and positives, yes and no's. And when I'm removing it remotely, it is tricky, but we move them into the light. I usually call in Archangel Michael and Jesus, and we move them into the light. If I'm doing it in person, sometimes we just move them into the light, or let me open my medicine bundle, or we draw them into a double terminated crystal, and we'll actually track the entity. The client will hold the crystal in a hand, and I'll actually track the entity, and I'll move it out of their field into the crystal. Once the entity is in the crystal, it goes into an opaque sheath very quickly. And then later I go outside and I blow it to the four directions. But you must make sure the entity is going into the light and not just jumping to somebody else.
Okay. Now one question people might have right off the bat here is this entity that you're trying to remove that could be attached to somebody, a negative entity or just something like a, I don't call it a hitchhiker, but something that's been a tag along for a very long time. How do you know if the entity is a positive or negative force, or does it not even matter?
I have a philosophy that once we leave our physical body, our spirit needs to move on to the light. So sometimes, a lot of times, these entities just want to be removed and they're not negative. So for instance, I did this guided meditation at this woman's house with a little group of people. And she's like, oh, I have a ghost. And I'm like, oh, whatever. And sure enough, like, I mean, she had a ghost. The radio was going on and off. The lights were flickering, you know, classic entities, right? And I said, okay, you know, I'll go home and I'll remove it from your house. You know, no big deal. By the time I drove back home, which is only like 15 or 20 minutes, she had gone into her closet and all of her clothes had been yanked off the hangers. And at this point, she freaked out. So I get home and I'm like, okay. You know, and I got all my little tools out. I went into my state and they were two older women who had passed over who just wanted to get out of here. So a lot of times entities will get stuck if they died suddenly or they had like chemo or a lot of medication and their energy fields bogged down. In that case, shamanic practitioners can do what's called a death rite. And we wind the chakras out and up into the ethers, always to the light. So a lot of entities are just benign hitchhikers. Evil entities. And when those are the ones that are more destructive, like actually, you know, pulling clothes off a hanger is scary, but it's not dangerous. Breaking cat's tails, breaking TV screens, razors flying around the house, that's definitely more evil and demonic. And those ones are hard to remove, and they're nasty. And they'll try to intimidate you. Like, I've had entities want to kill me, threaten my family. I had one totally possessed woman that, like, levitated off my table and crashed. and started like thrashing around in my office till she hit her head so hard she passed out. But the trick is you cannot go with this work with fear. Like once you have any fear, even when this one entity, it was a 9-foot Minotaur that wanted to like sex torture, kill me and hurt my family. And it's like, it's a test. And as soon as you have any sort of fear with that, they have power over you and it's a done deal.
Right. Yeah, right. No, I'm with you 100% on that. So the next question is, could someone carry an entity with them from the past, a past life? What are your thoughts about that?
So it gets a little convoluted. I'm going to say yes. Now, whether it's an entity or a negative thought form, I can't 100% identify, but negative thought forms can mimic entities. It is a form of consciousness. And you can carry that consciousness with you life after life, especially if there was a trauma in that life that you didn't have the coping skills or you created a contract. So a lot of times when I'm doing a past life, if there's an entity to be removed, or a thought form, right? We will extract it no matter what it is. But then we've got to break the contract, right? Because it's literally in your RNA. That contract's in your RNA of your DNA. So then I have my clients do this whole DNA activation where they go in and we're figuring out where that trauma point is. And they're literally looking at the fractal of that DNA and healing it. And the results are absolutely amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
So I have a question. I have a question for you regarding the contract. I think that's very fascinating. You know, a lot of us, we have, of course, in our DNA. You know, I've been talking on the shows a lot about having trauma, or trauma can go back 6, 7 or more generations, and it ends up in your DNA. And for some reason, people don't always understand why they go through what they go through, and they don't probably realize it goes way back to something else. But how do you figure out then what this contract might be to get down to the bottom of that? How do you go about that?
So when I'm taking someone on a journey for a past life, we are actually going into 4 different chambers, which represent the 4 chambers of your heart. And the first chamber that we move into is that point of death, like the chamber of wounds. And you're just observing how you died, right? The next chamber is the contract. So we're literally moving into see what contract was made, because the contract was really made to protect you, but it ends up becoming limiting. So we go in, we break that, we figure out what that contract is. And so the person is in a state of hypnosis. And so we're recreating that memory through the cells, right? It's that cellular memory. And the contract will finally come. Sometimes it takes a while. So then we're literally declaring that contract is now null and void, right? So me being the witness strengthens the breaking of that contract. Not just me having any witness, right? Having a witness solidifies the breaking of that contract, because it's witnessed. And then we move into the chamber of soul pieces. We get that soul piece, because a lot of times that soul piece fled for safety. And then we move into like a gift of divination. But once that contract's broken, I have people write a new declaration.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And that could be just about anything, right?
Yes, a lot of people, okay, say for instance, like the total common one was you were a healer and you were burned at the stake, right? Totally common. So a lot of times when I get people who've experienced that, it's like, if I share my healing gifts, I'll burn or I'll die. So we kind of reverse that into it's safe for me to share my healing gifts, or, you know, you want to create that contract into a positive.
So I have a question, and I know that many people are going to be interested in hearing your answer on this one. Something that's completely relatable, something that people are going to sit and take notice of right when I ask this question. So, all right, so let's say hypothetically, you had dated somebody from a while ago, and you still don't understand why you might have feelings for this person and or a connection with this person. And if it, and some things just come up that just seem so odd. And let's say you're very different people now, but that for some reason there's a connection between you that is absolutely not understood, or maybe it's because of this quote unquote soul contract or whatever happened back in the day. And maybe most people aren't even aware of this. And I know many listeners and watchers right now are sitting here thinking about, this sounds a little familiar. Okay. So what kind of contract would somebody make with somebody, or breaking of the contract, when you have, let's say, a past love or a past life with someone, or someone you know now that you still for some reason can't seem to break away from to the 100th degree, what kind of contract would you rewrite for people like that? What are your thoughts on that? I'm sure you've had a few.
Absolutely. So, and you can also chalk that up to like a twin flame, right? And it's just like, oh, you cannot let go. It's like a tick that you just can't get rid of, right? So it's hard to give a specific answer because it depends what past life you guys had together, right? So some of them have been, one that's really, really common is, and I don't want to divert, but it kind of goes hand in hand. So I'll get there in a second, but a lot of times in these past lives, someone went off to war and died, leaving the spouse completely abandoned, and they created some sort of contract with that. Or somebody, I just dealt recently with one where in a past life, the father killed the woman, right? The soldier killed this woman, and now he came back as her father to mend the karmatic peace. Here's the caveat. She was holding a piece of his heart from this lifetime. So this work gets really twisted and convoluted, but a lot of times, just the generic, a lot of times someone went off to war, was killed at war, and left the spouse abandoned, maybe abandoned with children, that could lead to extreme poverty and even death. So they create this bind, and then you can repeat these past lives if you reincarnate and you run into that person again. Is what I've noticed, that each time you run into that person, there's more of a healing, but that contract is still binding.
Yeah, and to break it, does it give the person a little bit more peace or understanding, or what would you say, what happens when you can break that contract?
Definitely understanding, absolutely understanding. But the thing is I'm finding where it's stuck in the chakra field, right? Like, I use the chakra field a little differently. I use it as a timeline. So I'm going to find where it's stuck. In these situations, it's usually more stuck in the solar plexus because your power was taken away, not so much the heart. So I'm going to also go in and cut those cords. But by breaking that contract, it just something happens when you can get a person deep enough and they're breaking that contract. Not only are they understanding, and when you just understand what happened, that gives you peace, but it breaking that contract releases that bind. And it doesn't mean you'll never think of that person again. It's just you're not haunted by that nagging
strong connection, right? That nagging strong connection. Is that pretty much on it? Yeah. Now I have a question for you, another one here, regarding people who feel the presence along that same lines, the presence of a deceased loved one, such as a grandmother or maybe even a husband or a wife that might be hanging around them. And you hear this a lot from people who have lost their loved ones that, yeah, I can tell when my deceased husband is around me, or I can tell that my deceased grandmother is here with me or whatever of the kid. So is this truly the grandmother? Is this truly the husband? Is this truly the deceased wife? Or is it possibly an imposter? What are your thoughts on something like that?
So a lot of people aren't gonna like this, because I get a lot of people, oh, my grandma's with me. She's my protector. She's my guide, right? Again, once we leave this physical body, we are supposed to go rehabilitate. So in my lineage, I always like to blame it on the lineage, right? We have 5 levels to the upper world. We have the stone world, the plant world, the animal, in the ancestor, and then the crystal world. You need to be in the crystal world. So if someone's hanging around, they're stuck in one of these levels. So if grandma's hanging around or your husband's hanging around, yes, it could actually be them and they need to be crossed over. You might be adopting your husband's headache. Grandma might be influencing your decisions. Is that really helpful? That's kind of an infringement on your free will. So yes, it could actually be them not crossed over, or yes, 9 out of 10 times these negative entities are impostering as a loved one, as a deceased spouse, and they're actually sucking off your energy field.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of people can relate to that in terms of they want to believe that they are that whoever's around them is their protector, someone that still loves them, or maybe they just can't bear to release the pain they felt in losing them. And so, of course, they feel more comforted having them around or near them or by them, and then they feel like they can kind of move on through their life a little bit easier. And when it's a negative entity or imposter, which a lot of us can't always identify very readily, what kinds of things do you think people should look for in terms of if it could be an imposter? Like you mentioned the first one, let's just say sucking the living energy out of them, that would be one definitely. Anything else that they might notice?
You shouldn't be influenced by an outside source. Like, honestly, you shouldn't be influenced. So if someone's like, oh, you know, but my grandma is helping me make these decisions, or, you know, my father is with me and he wants me to do this, you're getting your free will, again, infringed on, and that's not of the light. So if you're getting headaches, if you're getting influence, right? But I've had so many people ask me to check their spirit guides. Mm-hmm. I won't do it. I ask them to check their own spirit guides. I have never had anyone come back and tell me their spirit guides were of the light. And it's super emotional for people because they've bonded so heavily with these spirit guides. And then they ask them if they're of the light and they get no. I've had people be really devastated. That's why I'm like, no, you check, you ask, they need to tell you. it's a really touchy subject.
Yeah. And I know it's because I think we're getting a little echo. And I know it's also probably because people just find comfort in wanting to believe again that the presence of something around them that they want to identify makes their pain or grief probably a little bit easier in the end. Let me throw at you another question here. I have had 16 attachments taken off of me in the last couple of years, 16 at the same time. I went through a very unusual remote process that I thought was, at first I thought it was bogus until it actually happened. And then I said, no, this isn't bogus, by an individual who was skilled at taking this off. Now, a lot of people, they don't know if they've got attachments on them. I didn't know that I had attachments on me. I don't even know how someone, she said I had 16 of them on me. I don't even know how they can tell how many are on a person. So my question to you is, how can you tell if somebody has one or more attachments on them, or how can somebody themselves tell that maybe they are being interfered with by something else? What's your thoughts about that?
So most people aren't aware they have an attachment because these negative attachments will start to boost the ego. They'll start to like get in your head. And so like a lot of healers, they'll really, you know, start to see more of like more entities on people or whatever. A lot of times that's a negative attachment kind of boosting your ego. And then they're sucking off that energy. So it's, when you're getting kind of complimented on an etheric realm, it's hard to understand. It could be a negative attachment. But sometimes people who've done a lot of work and they just start feeling off, they'll call me up. They'll be like, hey, can you check if I have an attachment? Is what I do is if it's just on the fly, I'm big with my pendulum. I'll use a pendulum. When I have someone in session and we don't know there's an entity, right? And we're in session and we're clearing the energy field. I'm tapped in with their journey. And sometimes you intuitively or you psychically know, and then you all pendulum test it to make sure. And then we'll do the entity extraction. Usually, like we discussed earlier, the benign entities are very easy to let go. It's more of the demonic ones that give you a fight. It's a touchy subject, but in session, I'll generally revert to my pendulum and you'll just know psychically.
Interesting. Interesting. So you have a question or a question here about, are all entities demonic, which I think you've just answered and said, no, they're not, or some just lost souls. Now, I was told for myself, oh, this was a few years ago when I went to have a Reiki session done, and there was, the gal that was working on me said that I had an attachment to me, and she said it's a lost woman. And I don't know how she could determine it was a woman or a man or an it or whatever, but she said it's a lost woman and she really likes hanging around you and everything, but I can't seem to get her off of you. She's very, very much attached to you. And so how do you handle situations like that with these lost souls? What do you do? Because I'm sure you've run into it. I can't remember this, Holly. Do you do Reiki sessions as well?
No, I don't. But it seems when I hear stories like this that a Reiki practitioner and maybe a shamanic practitioner, we're all channeling the same energy.
Yeah.
So universally, by free will, if you don't want an entity attached to you, then and you're giving me permission, right? You're in session with me and you're giving me permission to remove it, that entity has to go. And a lot of times they'll wind themselves around your spinal cord. So we run energy from the base of your spine to the base of your neck. And we have you imagine like a white hot poker. And that, like your spine becoming a white hot poker, that unravels the energy. And then in my lineage, we have moon Aiki, right? So we get these like fingers of light where we can actually reach in and unwind the entity. And you got to coax it, right? Because they're scared. They're lost. They're scared. You have to let it know it's okay to go to the light. It's going to be rehabilitated. So sometimes when you're removing like this woman that could be attached to you and they're lost and they're clinging onto you because you're safe. And so it's a process and we take our time doing it because you don't want to hurt the entity either. But finally, after enough coaxing, we can get it to go. Sometimes it seems never ending.
Have you ever had in your sessions with people their attachments attaching back or trying to attach to you or come back with you or follow you home or whatever? Have you ever had any incidents like that? And has anything been real drastic?
So when I'm working, I'm in sacred space. So I'm opening sacred space. And then we lock our wrists, right? So we etherically lock our wrists. And that's saying, no, you can't get in. When I was newer at this, and it was still kind of like, I would have a lot of things happen at my house. Like once, like a plate shattered in the cupboard, or it's always when you're taking a bath, they'll throw rocks at the window. But more recently, in my house where I live now, I moved in there about 3 years ago. And I will tell you, when I turn out the lights, there is a party in the laundry room. And even my son, he's like, Mom, you have a ghost. I'm like, yeah. And I get rocks thrown at the window. And finally, I had a girlfriend stay there, her and her boyfriend. I stayed somewhere else. And they're like, Holly, like your house is totally haunted. We heard footsteps. And I was like, oh. So a couple nights later, I'm in my house, sound asleep, and I hear the footsteps, right? And I was like, okay. So the next day I went to remove this, whatever it was, right? Oh, and also I would hear like this really hardcore scraping inside the walls. Mm-hmm. Like it sounded like somebody was scraping the wall with like a chisel or something. And then my neighbors would say, because our wall's attached, it sounds like you're in the kitchen, but we know you're not home. So I went to remove this entity, right? And I felt so terrible. It was my grandma. It was my grandma. She just wanted to go to the light. And I just ignored her for so long. So so I have had things kind of, you know, rear their head at me. But for some reason, I don't get too bothered. I did have somebody put two entities on me, which I was not happy about. They said they were going to remove them. And I felt clear. And then after they removed these entities, I was a mess and I had to have someone else remove them.
Oh, interesting. So they put them on you. Was it by accident or did they jump?
I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, and I'm thinking of a situation right now where I had somebody take note. When we first came into our house here, we kind of learned along the way that the kids, a couple of the teenage kids that used to live in here played with the Ouija board and probably didn't know what they were doing with it. And so when we bought this house and we moved from a different state to here, there was a lot of intense, and I mean intense, poltergeist activity, which was in all respects, could have terrified the common person. But for me, it was like, I'm not leaving this. I've already been into haunted houses. I'm not leaving this house and you're going to leave this house. And oh, it tried everything from tripping me downstairs to locking me out to flinging open stuck wardrobe doors that could not be opened unless you took something to pry them open. All kinds of little tricks. And I just kind of ignored it, but eventually after about 2 weeks though, it left or it seemed to have calmed down or left, but we've had activity in this house for a while. But I don't know offhand, what is your thoughts about people that move into new home locations, not new, like as in a new house, but a different home location, and someone reporting that there was never probably any ghostly experiences, or maybe they just didn't know what they're going through, and then all of a sudden something awakens. What are your thoughts on that? Because someone had said to me, well, maybe your energy awakened whatever was in this house where they were so oblivious before that they didn't know that they brought something in here. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, they were so oblivious they didn't see it. So, yeah. And I was just listening to the gentleman that you interviewed. Was it Jefferson Davis?
Oh, yes.
And you guys were discussing how you might hear a scratch in the wall, and it's a mouse, right?
Right.
So on the flip side, and I love that logic because it's so true. On the flip side, you might be experiencing paranormal activity, and you might be chalking it up to
a mouse in the wall.
A mouse in the wall, right? Like my grandfather had this video, he was in New Mexico and he was videotaping and I never saw it. And he's like, oh, there's a UFO. And then like later he's like, oh no, it was just a water drop. I never got to see it. I think it was a UFO, right? So it's when that cognitive dissonance sets in. But I also believe, and this is why the work is so convoluted, because it's every situation is so different. And I feel like in this work, I'm constantly like, what's going on now? How do we fix this? Oh, this is new. It's always so different. But I do believe, too, that your energy can reactivate portals. And if somebody was using a Ouija board, they're opening portals.
Yeah.
So you might have had that frequency match, like that high energy that reactivated the portal. And then my guess is that if the entity calm down after 2 weeks, it's because you weren't giving it any energy.
But the question is, where is it being released to? What are your thoughts about that?
Okay, so when we're using this crystal, we are very specific to blow it to the light. We're also, I didn't get into it, but we're loosening the ends with a candle, and then we're using what's called Florida water as a clearing spray, and we're we put it in our mouth, and then it's activated with our breath of life, right? So we're literally intending to send it to the light, and when we release it, we have to make sure we're not hitting a telephone wire or a tree or someone else's house. It is going straight to the light. I do know of an instance where this woman claimed that Jesus came into her house and removed the entity from her husband. And a couple of days later, their neighbor was shot by the cops for having a psychotic episode. So one, I don't think it was Jesus that removed an entity like that. And you have to know where the entity is going. Like when I teach, it has to go to the light. And I hear people all the time, oh, I'm screaming at this entity to get out. Where did it go? And that's the big problem too, is like even when you're coaxing the entity out and we're tracking it in, or we're just removing it to the light, like we have to make the client too, we have to visualize that light and send that in, that intention, or set that intention that it's literally going into the light or the crystal worlds, the fifth level for rehabilitation. We never just banish it.
One of the questions I would have for you would be, so you've been through a lot of different types of experiences with people, especially, and again, going back to the cattails being broken and things being smashed and things flying out of the cupboards or whatever, or things breaking around you or rocks being thrown at the windows. And I presume that you're also so used to this by now that you don't give it much of your own energy back. It's like, thanks, good one. That's what I tell people. I usually say, well, that was a good one, as long as they don't hurt me physically. Have you ever been hurt physically by anything that you did not have the strength to basically put up that boundary to keep them away from you? Anything like that?
No. Is what's funny is I held a retreat with some women. It was myself and two other facilitators quite a few years ago. And to cut costs, we were in a little house and I had to share a bed with one of the facilitators. And I'm a light sleeper. That night, it was almost like I was drugged. Mm-hmm. And she woke up with bruises and scratches, but I was fine. So for some reason, I've been okay. I want to backtrack really quick to the last question and people banishing just the entities out and not to the light. I don't think anybody's doing that in ill intention. I just don't think that their training has been quite as extensive as other people's training, and it's not their fault, but it can be very dangerous. I just wanted to put that disclaimer. No, I haven't been hurt that I know of, unless I have, like I do a lot of sports, you know, maybe there has been a couple times where I've been hurt and it was an entity, but I didn't chalk it up to that. Otherwise, no, not really.
Yeah, no, and that's good, because I know, what would you suggest for people to put like a boundary or a white light or something around them so that way they can be less resistant to getting an attachment or something of that sort? What would you suggest they do? Or if maybe they have an attachment on them, what would you suggest they do to personally get it off of them?
Well, I'm going to say that if you have an attachment, you have unresolved trauma. Once you clear that trauma, there's not a lot it can attach to. Personally, for me, I don't do the white light or anything like that. I know I'm protected. I don't even give it thought, actually. I am just constantly trying to do my shadow work. And so like I said, when people come in, like with the cattails being broken and the TV screens, we worked on the childhood. Yes, we're removing the entity after in that process, but the very first thing we're doing is we're working on that childhood trauma or that past life trauma, but the childhood will usually trickle back to the past. We're working on that childhood trauma to clear that frequency, because that entity is attaching to that frequency.
Yeah, and but that also brings me to another question, though, that people might have. There seems to be, let's see, how do I want to phrase this? Topa coming to my mind. Are you familiar at all with what a topa is, and how do we describe that to people? Because for the longest time, I've had people say to me, you're the one causing all of your issues. Okay, I know I'm psychokinetic. I know I'm telekinetic. I know I'm clairaudient, clairsentient. I'm an empath. I'm extremely sensitive. At times I'm psychic and then I'm not psychic, and there are things about me that I know my frequency can often drive certain things that come out of me or whatever. And so I had some people really are very adamant and they say, you know what, you're creating your own topas around you. All these little things that are stripping off of you and doing all this, that's not a ghost, that's not an entity, that's not some other apparition, that's you. What are your comments or thoughts to that?
Well, I believe a lot of times it is just us, right? With our unresolved trauma ramping this up. I do believe that is a very valid fact. But there are always exceptions. And just like I mentioned earlier, when I'd actually witnessed somebody be levitating off my table, right? Like if you roll off my table right here, if I'm laying on my back face up and I roll off, I'm going to roll off on my side. I literally saw this person levitate and move over and fall on the floor in the same position, right? So there are unseen forces after us or against us, however you want to phrase it. It is not always us. We can control, I'm going to say, like 95% of our reality if we do enough work. But no, there's always, you know, just like when it was my grandma haunting my own house because she wanted to be released. Like I didn't make that up, you know? So I appreciate that school of thought because it's very logical and accountable, but there's a lot of things out of our control too.
Holly, can you explain to people a little bit about when you talk about trauma, maybe some of the different forms of trauma, so that way people understand how they can be attracting some of this stuff?
So for me, I feel like the only, not in severe cases, obviously, like I've dealt with some horrific, horrific trauma, which, I mean, it's heartbreaking to see these patterns going on and on. But for, I'm going to say, less severe trauma, and I'm not discrediting anything, but it's because we don't have the coping skills to deal with it. So for example, years ago, I had this man come to me and he felt unsafe. He was a police officer, and then he went on to be like the emergency planner for the city, right? And he never felt safe. So we traced it back down to when he was a child. He was locked outside his house by his older sister. No big deal, right? But to a three-year-old, you are being locked out of your safety zone, and it leaves an imprint. So it can be something that benign. And I'm always telling the people that I work with, because they're like, well, you know, it wasn't that severe. I'm like, it doesn't matter. You didn't have the coping skills. And is what happens is it leaves this energetic imprint on your field. And then you start emanating that imprint, and it attracts that same situation back. So, you know, I've dealt with things as benign as, you know, my parents were late picking me up and I felt abandoned. And I'm not discrediting any of this, because when we're little people, that's a big deal. And if your parents were always there on time and all of a sudden they're not there, that's a big deal. And people are always like, oh, kids are resilient, right? Kids are resilient. They'll bounce back. No, they don't, because I work with adults all the time who have had things happen that we're just told to brush off, and it leaves a frequency in their energy field.
If someone has been through different forms of trauma, and then we have these hitchhikers that like to hitch a ride, what is it about your frequency or that trauma or that field that you have within you now that says to this, and we're talking hitchhikers in terms of energy hitchhikers, that they think that they can all of a sudden latch onto you? What would you say about that?
I believe it's an identification.
Ah.
They're identifying with the same frequency.
Ah.
I don't know if you noticed my computer screen, the color's really off, but we're both in the same color spectrum with what we're wearing.
I know. I noticed that when we first started, I thought, isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Right.
Right.
I had on green and I changed. Right. So the hitchhiker is identifying with something familiar. Now, I know we're gearing more towards the entities and the paranormal, but how I keep an entity off of somebody, or how I get that person to get back in the swimming pool or feel safe again, is soul retrieval. You will not leave my office, I mean, hardly ever, without getting a soul retrieval. And it's that fracture too that emits that negative frequency, right? You want to bring that soul piece back in so you're operating from wholeness again. And then once you bring that soul piece back and you let it integrate, you can't operate off that fear anymore because it's been replaced with that piece of you that fled for safety. So that's a whole nother topic, but every time I do an entity extraction, there's a soul retrieval piece involved in that.
Explain whether it's genetic, whether there's hitchhikers that just love to keep this behavior going. How are you able to determine what the true origin, I guess that's the word I'm looking for, is of that individual? What are your thoughts about that?
So that gets into epigenetics too, because we all have the alcoholic gene or the gambling gene. It just needs to be turned on. So like I said, every person I work with is so individual. I want to make sure I'm answering the question. If it has been turned on through the epigenetics and the person's mother was an alcoholic, now they're the alcoholic and they're coming to me, one, they probably do have a hitchhiker and we're going to remove that. But I'm also going to ask, were the grandparents an alcoholic? How is the mother raised? Because now we're diving into the ancestral line. And so a lot of times too, we get into this journey and we invite the ancestors in. And the number one thing that I think, even though it's not quite your question, is people come into me and they're like, I have heart disease and it's hereditary. So we will go back to the ancestors, the same thing with gambling, and we will see where the dis-ease in the heart, where the heart broke in the ancestral line. And a lot of times, that heart disease is due to, ironically, a lot of what I deal with a lot is people have gambled everything away and lost their family. I know I'm kind of like getting convoluted, but so if someone's an alcoholic, we'll see what that emotion is, why they're what they're covering up, and we'll go in and we'll do an ancestral healing on the original trauma wound in the ancestral line. Because again, that epigenetics is carried in your RNA, which is your DNA. And it just, but, and then that's where the entities attach though, right? So it's, this work is really messy. It's not black and white. It's like pretty much a gray zone all the time. In fact, I've even had to do, like I had some lady when I first started, her husband was shot and attached to her, and I didn't want to work on her because she was a friend. So I sent her to someone else, removed the entity. He came back. So I'm like, just come in. Let me see what I can do. I had to do a soul retrieval on the entity to get him to the light. And then she was fine after that. Her headaches went, he was shot in the head. Her headaches were gone. It changed her relationship with her new husband. So, I mean, I have the second version of this workbook out. You can find it on Amazon. You just make sure you type in Adventures in Shamanism workbook. And it's what it does is it's like a journal, kind of. You're doing your own, it takes you through the medicine wheel. Obviously, you're not removing entities, but it takes you through past lives, inner child, soul retrieval, all these guided meditations you can do on your own. So if you want to experience this work on your own, you can definitely do that. My website is hollymariesoulcoaching.com. And the good thing is if you get the book and you get stuck, just email me and I'll walk you through where you're stuck at. And you get the session typed up, because once you remove energy, you got a little bit of homework to do, so you get that as well.
On behalf of the show, Holly, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you. I'm really grateful. It was really a lot of fun. Thank you.